Chapter 2, Love. Your task is not to seek love, but simply to seek and find within yourself all the barriers you built against it. Rumi. The second ray of the spirit that must fill the second chamber of the etheric heart is called absolute love. Talking about love carries with it a risk that we must consider at the outset. For this is a topic on which countless texts, poems, ideas, and theories exist. We run the risk of thinking that we have already experienced this love of which we are speaking, one way or another, reminding us of how many times, perhaps, we have said phrases such as, "I love you," or "You are the love of my life." Most probably, the vast majority of us have already fallen in love and believe that we have suffered or are suffering for love, or else hope someday to find the love of our life, if we have not yet found it. Well, we ask you, dear reader, to make an effort now and try to forget, even for a moment, everything you believe you know about love, because all that we have just described and which is common in our daily lives, in reality has nothing to do with absolute love, the second ray of the spirit. To try to explain a power that cannot be fully explained with words nor be understood with our limited consciousness, let's try to use some examples and comparisons. First of all, it is important to say that absolute love, of which we are speaking here, is not related to a more or less elevated feeling, or even with what most of the time we believe to be love. This love of the spirit has nothing to do with a feeling, but is a power that must fill the second chamber of the etheric heart and be reflected in the head sanctuary with the entrance of the second ray of the spirit in the macrocosm of the human being. Love is related to the right brain hemisphere and is directly connected with our understanding and comprehension. When penetrating our being, love, the second ray of the spirit, must totally transform our consciousness towards understanding the universal purpose for the world and humanity. So it's not possible to love and understand deeply something or someone unless we have the ability to see the motives and forces at work in all situations. So there is no point in calling the partial feelings of our egocentric state of life love, real love, because from the moment we truly understand something or someone, we can no longer exclude it from our sphere of love, understanding, and acceptance. Thus, it is said that true love excludes nothing and no one. However, let's observe a little of the dynamic of our day-to-day life. One day we wake up happy, and so we believe that we can love and spread that love to everything and to all, no exceptions. Then an unexpected situation happens, someone surprises us, and we are deeply irritated, and this loving feeling will gradually change, and we are no longer so willing to love everyone. The day goes on, and difficult situations at work, in the family, at a university, in traffic, in our everyday lives, appear one after the other. Against our initial purpose, we dispute with those closest to us, such as friends, family, parents, partners, and colleagues at work. With a bit of bad luck, at the end of the day, we are presented with an unexpected rain and return to our homes convinced that the world is a place where everything is wrong and that nothing deserves our respect or consideration, not to mention our love. What happened? Where did all our love go that we were so convinced we should spread worldwide? Over the days, how many of us do not accumulate sorrows from people whom we thought we loved? And today, can we even look them in the eye? People we sometimes tolerate, to whom we say things or for whom we do things without real feeling or sincerity, just as to not displease them. Why do we do this? Despite all the justifications we can use to convince ourselves that this is a part of life and that the world leads us to this kind of attitude, let us make an effort to be honest and let us answer ourselves. Is this the attitude of someone who is on the true spiritual path? Of one who has the lofty aim of one day becoming love itself? But dear reader, do not feel so bad about yourself, for it is impossible for you and also for anyone in whom the second ray of the Spirit has not yet a permanent abode in their life system to experience His real and unconditional love. The reason for this is because human beings, in their current state of egocentricity, live only from a mere reflection of true love, manifesting it in a distorted way, as if in a lower octave. Therefore, it is essential to understand that, in this situation, what we call love is based on the forces currently circulating in our astral body. So the love we feel is a feeling so volatile and constant and fleeting. The astral body of human beings in general could accurately be described as a real roller coaster because it presents all the volatility and constancy and unpredictability of all the astral forces that circulate inside and outside of us in an uncontrollable way. This is why sometimes we are happy, sometimes sad, sometimes we love others passionately, and at other times we hate with equal intensity. What we need to recognize with serenity and sobriety is that while the basis of our love is in the astral body, it cannot be otherwise. Maybe now we can better understand Rumi's beautiful and profound words mentioned at the beginning of this chapter. Your task is not to seek love, but simply to seek and find within yourself all the barriers you've built against it. Therefore, we must not seek love, because it cannot be found this way, that is, as we find ourselves now, but rather focus all our efforts to seek and find within ourselves the barriers that we have built against it. So we would like to extend an invitation to you now. Look inside yourself and perceive now all the barriers against love that exist in your being and that have been built with the bricks and mortar of your own selfishness. Selfishness is the one and only source of all these countless barriers, the selfishness that separates us from true love, from the touch of the second ray of the Spirit that has the mission to make us understand and cooperate so that the latent universal principle manifests itself in us, in our peers, and consequently throughout the world. As long as our life is centered in our untransformed astral body, that in our egocentric state of consciousness it would be better to call by the name of desire body, because one moment you want one thing, and the next moment you want its exact opposite, we need to recognize that our efforts to tread a spiritual path will have no real practical result. We will be like children playing make-believe, and at the end of life, we will be forced to recognize that we play at living and that we don't really live. There is no gentler way to say these things to someone who seriously seeks the truth. For such a human being does not need beating around the bush with half-truths. If we seek the truth with all our being, we need to do something practical, not tomorrow, not in an imaginary future, which we may not even have the opportunity to live, but in the only time that exists and which is at our disposal, now. What can be done practically now? First, recognize all these aspects of yourself. No excuses, no excuses. Realize how much of you is still dominated by your endless desires? See how you're still looking for a spiritual path and a spiritual transformation only in those moments when seeking for a refuge, as if it were an oasis for a pilgrim desperately thirsty in the desert of life, or like a castaway looking for a lifeline? In those moments, we consume the shelves of self-help books, or else we seek some instantaneous or miraculous solution, an enlightened guru, another source of peace and security. In those moments, we become religious, pious, yes, conveniently pious. However, when the thirst and the apparent shipwreck move away a little, do we not rush back to the roller coaster of our astral body and yearn for the strong sensations that its ascents and descents give us in its countless twists and turns? And then we get sick again, and once again, the knees bend and hands join. But let's face it, is this a true spiritual path? Living this way, is there any basis for a real change in our consciousness and our life? By living like this, we will be treating our search for truth as we treat our best moment in modern life. We post our best photos, we find the best catchphrases, and we wait for the rain of likes on our social media profiles. And how many comments we get, right? Touching, uplifting, rewarding. Yes, this is all beautiful, but from the point of view of truth, of the search for truth, and of the effective transformation of life, this is useless. In no way do we criticize the value that social networks provide to us today. Without them, possibly you wouldn't even be reading this book. This book, however, is intended for serious seekers of truth, for those who wish to pay the price of walking a real spiritual path. It is to these seekers that we say, the only way to be touched by the second ray of the Spirit, by the ray of love, is to remove the inner obstacles that are found within us. The path proposed by the spiritual school for the removal of these obstacles is a process, a gradual transformation through which human beings must go if they want to make the promise of the universal principle of the absolute being, of the core of their being, a reality in themselves. This path begins with self-knowledge. But this is not a question of self-knowledge where the I becomes an expert in the twists and turns of its personal labyrinth. The effect of this would be that he would become experts in our own selfishness, not liberation from selfishness and its barriers. Self-knowledge, the first aspect of the path proposed by the spiritual school, is the recognition of our inner world, of every way and detour, using the light of the lamp of the central consciousness, of the spark of the absolute being, of the universal principle, as the only possible basis. In that light, we can recognize whether what we think is light in ourselves is not in reality darkness. In that light, we recover gradually and through a great inner effort our lucidity, our sobriety in relation to ourselves. We recover a minimum degree of objectivity in the midst of the sea of subjectivity in which we live immersed. It is this lucidity which springs from the connection of our consciousness with the universal in our being that allow us to unravel our labyrinth and find the exit. Our labyrinth is made of very subtle walls. It is made of thoughts, of desires, and of actions which we believe are part of our being, just as a newborn child thinks that the swaddling clothes around it are part of its body. The reality, which every sincere seeker of truth must discover for themselves, is that we are thoughts and feelings, and that our actions are largely blind and automatic reactions. These are true repetitive mechanisms which lead us to go up and down the roller coaster of our astral body, and which leave us completely filled with the nausea of recognizing the total lack of meaning in the life we live. We need to free ourselves from the illusion that we live in order to unmask these infinite automatisms and conditioning, freeing and rebalancing the triangle of our consciousness, the triangle of our soul, formed by our thinking, desiring, and wanting. It is this real freedom of the soul that constitutes the second aspect of the path proposed by the spiritual school, and is also the basis for the further development of a consciousness and a life truly free from selfishness. This is the way of demolishing the barriers of our selfishness, the barriers that keep us away from the only true love of that universal power that manifests itself through the second ray of the Spirit. However, dear reader, we must tell you in all sincerity that this path is not possible if it is not the main goal of a lifetime. It is not with partial efforts, with a superficial interest, not even with good intentions, that one can tread such a path. It is these half efforts and good intentions that make us say, "I would so much like to put all this as the most important thing in my life, but I don't have the time. I don't think I can. Maybe I'm not worthy of it yet." This may sound reasonable, but in essence, they are just excuses and self-deception. In essence, a true spiritual path, and especially nowadays, will never ask people to turn their back on their real obligations and duties. On the contrary, this path will show people that it is only when they integrate all the roles of their life, when they abandon nothing in their life, but when they put the only thing real and necessary first, that all becomes clear and ordered, that in essence, everything becomes possible. In view of this, many great ones of the Spirit, when asked in the past about what was needed to walk such a path, answered directly, "All or nothing." Without this all or nothing, the all or nothing of putting the path as the only inner goal of life, we will succumb to the desert sand of this world and lose our life in the ups and downs of the roller coaster of our desires, trying desperately to give this endless inconstancy the sacred name of love. Those who have the courage to put the path that will lead them to freedom as the central point of their whole life will certainly understand what we are saying. All those who have walked and are walking this path have passed and are going through the same experiences. It is our wish that all those who really yearn for this path make a real effort to remove the obstacles within themselves so that the second ray of the Spirit can touch them and thus allow the birth of a new understanding in all of them, a new understanding based on a new activity from the sanctuary of the heart and the head, the understanding that is the key to true love. To these seekers of truth, we address these words at the end of this chapter. Work hard on self-knowledge and on the transformation of your thinking, feeling, and doing. Free yourself from the endless spin of the roller coaster of your desire body. Live intelligently and consciously, so that your life can be an example of your words that you believe. In this way, may the universal power of true love fill the second chamber of your etheric heart. May this power also radiate from your head as a new understanding, so that your life may finally be a witness of your words, a testimony of love.